You've just entered the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. If you've come for actual legal advice, you need to turn right around, honey. You need to get out of here, because you ain't going to get none of that. They quibble, and they squabble, and they bicker. But if you want to hear meaningless opinions, this is the right place. They got plenty of that. Stuff that makes no sense at all. They go off on tangents. It's crazy talk. If that's your thing, keep listening. They'll keep talking.
Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. It's another episode of the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. You've entered the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker.
Yay!
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker on this February 3rd, 2021. This is our second episode of the day, this is with Michael Spedden, the host of the podcast Foul Players Radio, coming to us from somewhere in Maryland. We're not sure where, but it's somewhere near Perryville, and where that is, we don't know that either. But our client for today will be Mummies on Parade. So that's something that he will act as guest counsel as we get into it. But let's talk a little bit to Michael. So Michael, tell us a little bit about Foul Players Radio.
Well, I started my podcast, and thank you all for having me, fellas.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks for coming.
And I started Foul Players Radio a number of years ago. You know, I'm an actor and a musician myself. And I was always interested in, the history of arts and entertainment, performing arts, pop culture in my region, which is, Maryland, PA, Baltimore, DC, Philly, New York, Virginia, that area.
It's and the entire Eastern Seaboard is what you're saying.
Well, the Mid-Atlantic, the hell with the South. No, I'm just kidding. But I enjoyed just kind of the history of, the bands that played here, the television personalities on like the old independent TV stations, that kind of thing. And I wanted to create a podcast doing that, kind of creating an oral history and hearing the stories behind it. And a lot of people have been interested in listening to it. And then, I met Steve about last summer, probably about 6 or 8 months ago. And I've been, getting national guests and getting to meet people that are podcasting across the country. And I've enjoyed doing that as well. So I've also had some folks that were, actors, musicians. I had a fellow on the other week who was Jay David, who was the drummer for Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show in the 70s. And
you're saying he was Jay David. He is no longer.
Oh, he's Jay David. He was the drummer.
Oh, got it.
And as far as I know, he's still Jay David. At least that's how he said it, his name when I interviewed him. And
oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear he sounds like he's still with us.
Yeah, yes, he is.
Guy hasn't changed his name to like L David.
No, absolutely. Or K or anything else like that. He told some great stories about, touring and playing with those guys. He was also with David Crosby, performed with Brenda Lee in the 60s. So I just love hearing these stories, people's stories of, careers in the performing arts and the people they've played with, the things they've accomplished. I really enjoy that. And, my listeners sort of do too.
And so when you were talking about TV, local TV, when you were a kid, did you have a horror host?
Yes, we did. We had a couple of them. In Maryland, Baltimore and DC are only 40 miles apart. So back in the days of antenna, we got Baltimore and a couple of DC stations as well. A lot of times people said I grew up with three channels. We had a couple of independent channels. Think about the Weird Al Yankovic movie UHF.
Yeah.
Sort of like that, really. We had Channel 45 in Baltimore, WBFF, and three people started that station, and they were run on a shoestring. And during the day, we had Captain Chesapeake.
Captain Chesapeake.
Yeah. I had his daughter on my show not too long ago.
Was that the kiddie show host?
And he was the kiddie show host. he would host before and after school, bringing on the Three Stooges and cartoons and Gilligan's Island. And he had his puppet friends with him. And then he was also ghost host on the weekends. In Washington, we had Channel 20, which we were able to get on UHF. And they had Captain 20, who Captain 20 was a, he was a spaceman. He had like big Spock ears and wore a space suit. And he was also Count Gore Duvall on the weekends.
But and Captain 20, it just seems like a really lazy marketing person came up with that.
I want to talk about the fact that on the weekends he was Captain Gore Vidal.
Oh, yeah. Count Gore Duvall, yes.
Oh, Gore Duvall. Count Gore Duvall.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and well, I guess the reason he may have used Captain 20 was because I guess it sounded kind of space-ish, you know, like R2-D2 or...
or you know, not 19 or 21.
Right, exactly. Well,
Captain 20 of the future. And he
actually had a couple of other personas that he used depending on the kids show that he was hosting.
Like Captain 37?
Matt, for a second. Captain Chesapeake was that much better, creatively speaking?
Well, it wasn't just a number. That was the number of your channel.
Yeah.
Like Captain 4, Captain 7.
Yeah. It sounds like these guys.
At least you're naming it off of like a body of water that's near you.
If you name it after a body of water, how does that make it better than a number?
How many people do you know that are numbers?
Zero.
Exactly.
How many people that I know that are named after a body of water?
Oh, anybody named Lake?
Zero.
Ricky Lake.
Veronica Lake.
Yes, exactly.
Those people.
Break Lake.
Anyone with the last name of Huron or Superior or Erie or any of those? Yeah.
Okay.
I know an Erie.
I'm detecting. Did you name one of your kids after a body of water?
No.
Mississippi okay. Brown Sheep.
Yes, my child Atlantic.
No, wow. I honestly think I have a friend who did. I think he's got a kid named after a lake.
Ah. No, our kids will have weird names, but no bodies of water.
No bodies of water, that's good.
If you remember, Matt, if you actually saw Captain Chesapeake, you kind of remember what his thing was. He was sitting on the deck of his boat, and he had Moni the sea monster superimposed kind of green screen style behind him. And behind
so
him,
they used blue screens.
Or blue screen probably at the time, yeah. And the thing is that, you know, they could have had all this beautiful scenery of the Chesapeake Bay in the background, but what did they have in the background? Bethlehem Steel. He's in the water outside of Bethlehem Steel. I'm surprised the sea monster didn't go under and come up as a skeleton, you know?
Wow, that's really weird.
Yeah, that's what it was, you know, smokestacks and, trucks driving around, you know, and they would show Bethlehem Steel in the background.
It's basically showing the kids what their occupations were going to be as they grew up.
Well, if you grew up there, it probably was.
Yeah,
too,
yeah.
So. Yeah.
Welcome to another depressing show, kids. Here's your future right behind me. But
the second season of The Wire is right there.
Yeah, right now, right, it's magic time. Here's my sea monster friend. Tomorrow you're in a factory.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to say a job at Bethlehem Steel doesn't sound that bad right now with the economy. Yeah. That was a pretty good job. Union wages.
Oh, it was for many years. Yeah. I mean, three generations of my family worked there. Both sides of the family. Yeah. It had its time, but it's no longer there now.
I figured.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of those old time steel jobs. They left Allentown, Greg. Remember that song?
Yes. That's how I know about these terms.
These terms like steel?
And Bethlehem.
Yep.
Chromium Coke something. I can't remember the words.
It's okay, Greg.
I was so sad, Michael, because I grew up in New York where we didn't have a horror host. I mean, we had great television stations, but we had Monster Chiller Horror Theater, which had the most amazing graphic at the beginning, like the stop motion six-fingered hand coming out of the ground.
Okay.
That was scarier than any of the movies they ever showed. Just that first intro,
okay.
The joking like Svengoolie type.
Oh yeah, Svengoolie.
Svengoolie.
Yeah, that's how he's actually national now. There's my friend still watches Svengoolie. like repeats.
I have a feeling we're getting a reveal.
Oh my gosh, Michael. Greg, look at his shirt.
Wait, I'm swiping over.
Look at Michael's shirt.
You see, I didn't make that shit up.
Wow.
He has a Spengooly shirt. I don't know what the hell I've just walked into today, but this is going to be sad.
Have you never
shown up?
Every Saturday night.
Saturday night, yeah. 8 o'clock here. I don't know where it is, if it's different on the West Coast, but yeah.
But then I discovered Elvira, because Elvira was a nationally syndicated show.
I think you discovered her boobs, though, didn't you, Greg?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's why I watched the show.
Amazing. Wasn't it for cleavage. Her hair?
Best cleavage ever.
Mm-hmm. Ever.
Ever.
In the world.
Ever.
Well,
but I
so how did you wind up in murder mystery theater, Michael? I mean, where did that come from?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've been an actor for a number of years now. I've been a musician for longer, and I.
Then they combine. I killed all of the people in your band or something?
Yes. I was ready to. I was ready to. A couple of years back, I was doing a play for a church, actually. I was helping out. They were doing a passion play for Easter, and I met a couple of people doing that had a murder mystery company. They invited me to come along and perform with them. And we perform on trains and boats, and we do fundraisers and that kind of thing. And I got invited to join, and then the owner, who'd been doing it for about 30 years, decided he wanted to go do something else. Just wanted to kind of step away from it. And I bought it from him, and I changed the name of the company to Foul Players, the Foul Players of Perryville. So
what were they called before
Otter Productions.
So from one animal to another.
Yeah,
you should have called it Captain 20.
Oh, leave it alone, man. Stop looking at that scab. So Michael, is it like one of those interactive murder mystery kind of theater things where
yes we perform and we're not on the stage. Like when we perform, you know, for example, in the boat, we're performing, people are eating dinner and, we're walking through, between the tables and we're actually performing in the dining area, and we're constantly dropping hints and clues and that kind of thing. And, people are, and then there's usually a crazy death, they're comedies is what they are. And the people have to look at the clues and what was said and figure out exactly, what happened, what really did happen. And then we have at the end, you guess, and then we figure out who the right people were, the people that got it right. We draw them out of a hat and you win a prize. And it's a lot of fun. And we've had folks that follow us, they look on our calendar, and there's not much on our calendar, I'd say, for the last year. Sure. But
yeah, so you're like on a train in Cumberland, Maryland, back in June.
Yes, yeah, that was the last thing we were scheduled to do. That never happened. And people do follow. They look at the titles of the shows, and they see when we switch up the shows. And we've had some people that have seen, a number of the different shows, and they've enjoyed them and had a lot of fun. And so, we do that. And They're silly shows, they're not anything too deep, nothing too graphic, something that everybody can kind of laugh at and have a good time. And
what kind of character do you usually play? Like, what's your type? Are you the butler or the rich millionaire who gets killed, or
I'm usually the detective. I usually come out and narrate. The detective is also the narrator. I come out and warm up the crowd with a little monologue at the beginning. I swear everybody in, everybody on the train or on the boat or whatever is deputized, and I swear everybody in. And then I just kind of in between scenes, I kind of come in and out. I ask around. I say, man, I just heard somebody screaming. Did you hear that? What happened out here? And then I'll see who's paying attention and who isn't. But the thing that's really neat about this is that we give out a program. We give out a program, and people actually unfold their programs, and they're taking copious notes. they've got a whole page of notes about this person and that person and what this person said and what that person said. And I'm like, man, these people are good.
Do you ever involve the guys who make the food? Do the guys who like are creating the dinner for this dinner theater thing, do they ever get involved in the production too? Or you guys like do dual duties?
Well, yeah, we've had a couple of people, you know, come in for small parts and things like that. But usually when we're doing this, we're finding that the caterers are just busy, you know, so they really don't have the opportunity to do so. When I didn't own the company, we were on a train that we don't perform on anymore. And there was a person who was part of the train crew that thought he was part of the show and wasn't. And we had to have a talk with him and his boss.
That's got to be uncomfortable.
Embarrassing.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he would just come in and start talking, you know, like we'd be in the middle of delivering lines between a couple of characters. And it's not pure improv where there's a storyline, but no set in stone script, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, there's no set in stone script. And so, but the thing was like, you know, this guy would come in and start saying things that had nothing to do with anything. And we would just try to kind of work him out of it somehow.
So it's kind of like if our show showed up at your show, that's what would happen.
Right, right. Yeah. So, but yeah, we interact with the crowd quite a bit. You know, we're constantly breaking the fourth wall. People are constantly breaking the fourth wall at us. And, you have to, you know, interact with the crowd and deal with, you know, sometimes people not, they don't like in a mean spirited way heckle, but they like to get their jokes in or make a crack or something like that from time to time. And
I know how that works. I have one right now. So did Mexico write you a check for that fourth wall?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, dealing with the psycho dishwasher who would come out and go, I saw the woman in the back.
Yeah.
Do you emulate your detective character?
That's why Brendan doesn't do improv.
Do you emulate your detective character after any famous detective? Like, do you have inspiration? Like, I want to be like
Sherlock Holmes or
Ellery Queen.
I've made characters based on certain things or like a mix of a couple of different people, but not really my character. No, I kind of do my own thing with my character. I'm sort of, you know, you think about it, sort of the film noir detective with the hat, sometimes like the raincoat, you know, the long trench coat, raincoat kind of thing.
Keep that close.
Yeah.
have you considered doing like more like of a darker serial killer kind of show for the younger audience?
Sometimes our humor can be a little dark. And the thing that's really funny is that you're right about that for a younger crowd. The thing is, when we do the shows on a train, we're doing these sometimes for three or four cars of people. So we're really doing the show four times. You know, we go from, every scene has two characters interacting. So we go from one car to the next, to the next, to the next.
Oh,
when everybody gets to the end, then they switch the characters they're interacting with and they go, you know, one, two, three, four back. Huh, and the thing is, it's funny is that, you know, when I do like my opening monologue and swearing in, and even with scenes and things like that too, we've had, you know, people kind of like tell the same jokes, you know, one car, they think it's hysterical. The next car, they're like, all like, oh, you know, they didn't like it. Right. So it just varies. It's really funny. And you can't always predict how a crowd is going to react to a joke, but we just go do our thing. You know, we just go do our thing.
Wow.
That's really interesting. That sounds like the funnest job ever.
It really is. And the thing that I'm really lucky about is that I got to know a number of people that had been with the company before I had started working there and before I'd taken it over, and they were all great. And I kept them on because they really know what they're doing. They're funny. But then I brought in a few new people in too that I had done some community theater with and acted with and different things. And they've really taken to it as well. And so the thing that's good about it is sometimes you get people that create their own community theater group and they cast themselves as the star of everything and the hell with everybody else. I'm completely the opposite. You know, with the murder mysteries, I do my thing. But the thing is, I create characters with these folks in mind, and I'm always thrilled to see what they bring out of the characters, you know, what, you know, how they handle the character when they get it, when they're playing that part. And I sit back and I let my people do their thing. You know, I sit back and I have confidence in all of them that they're going to do a good job. And I don't feel like I need to carry the show or get every laugh. I'm kind of like, you know, how Jack Benny used to handle it. He would just sit back and let the rest of his folks get the laughs, you know?
So you write all the stories or come up with all the plays and then they're the primary actors?
Yes. Yes. I've written five of them so far that we've done. We had a couple that belonged to the company before that we did. And then we have a couple of other ones that some other company members are, you know, currently working on now. We plan to do when things open back up. So, you know, everybody contributes and we get along well. I chose the people very carefully that I brought in with this year.
That makes sense.
I can't ask for better. And I'm proud of them and I'm proud to work with them. You know, all of them. And I've got about 20 people, you know, and we usually use about five or six per show. So I rotate quite a bit. And I have to say I'm pleased with them. I consider myself very lucky to have them.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's for your, go ahead, Brendan. Sorry.
I was going to say, and on top of that, as an employer, you know, and as somebody who's, you know, trying to run a business and then have your business be the kind of business that just forget about it over the last year. That's gotta be rough. I mean,
yeah.
I work from home as a tech guy and it doesn't matter. You know, I can't go to the office. Who cares? I need to go to the office anyway. But, you know, I have family in like the restaurant business out on the West Coast and it's been rough. It's been terrible. And so for somebody like you that has 20 employees, it's gotta been a real tough haul.
Right. Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, it's only, you know, it's part-time work. The thing that I'm fortunate with too, with, you know, running a theater company is that I don't have a theater. I use everybody else's venues. So I don't have rent. I don't have an electric bill. I don't have to maintain bathrooms and food service and all that. You know, we're like a band really, you know, we go and play wherever they'll hire us. So that's been a good part of it too. Another thing, you know, and I got some of the best show business advice years and years ago when I was primarily playing in bands, and that's don't quit your day job. So I still have my job, you know, which I still work.
Oh, that's good.
I still have a job. And
what is your day job?
I work in insurance, and I can't get very specifically since I'm not really a spokesman for the company. But I work with companies to lower their risks. We'll say that. And they don't like me to, you know, again, I'm not really speaking for the company, so they don't like me to elaborate too much.
It's Greg,
not
it's the actually mafia. It's breast insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. That's a job? That's a thing? I can insure breasts?
I'm sure there's probably, well, you know, they said they had Julie Andrews insured her voice. I think Jennifer Lopez insured her rear end.
That's not
the line that I'm in.
I'm going to insure my athlete's foot.
As an insurance professional, I would have to go out and personally inspect the health of the assets to determine, you know, what would be the proper insurance rates. Okay.
I'm sure they do have loss control people and underwriting and everything else.
Brendan's really overthinking this job.
I'm taking some notes.
Career change. He's like, ooh.
It's a whole new thing for me. It's a side gig. I got to get into this.
That and the blackmail, both of them together.
That's a thing too. I mean, you know, Roger, I think Roger Clemens had his arm insured or something, or somebody did.
Well, they do a lot of that for actors, I think, for people who have specific body parts that are of value to something. They insure that, especially if you're getting into some
I read this major once production. The wall.
I'm going to insure some body parts for sure.
I read an article once that you know, sometimes if you shave your eyebrows, like one out of 100 people, they won't go back. And Bob Geldof, who is in Pink Floyd The Wall from the Wu-Tang Rats, they insured his eyebrows because he had to shave off his eyebrows in a scene.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah, and they actually comfortably numb scene in
The Wall. Yeah, great scene. Yeah, and
they insured his eyebrows.
Because if they didn't go back, he would have been screwed. You know.
That's a good reason to get your eyebrows shaved like once a year. Just go, I'm going to shave them off and see if they grow back or not.
I did shave my eyebrows once, or twice, actually.
So you looked perpetually surprised?
Yeah.
I was happy they grew back. I was the 99% of normal people.
Well, I think this is a good opportunity to move into defending our client or dealing with our client, which is Mummies on Parade. Michael really doesn't know what he's getting himself into being here, but essentially what we're going to do is we're going to talk about mummies and I guess the various different facets.
Michael will barely talk about mummies. That's
Greg found this client. So Greg, I'm going to give you the floor on discussing mummies and.
Okay. If I find a client, Matt said, what client should we have? And it's a joke. I heard that you were into horror films. You're a fan of horror.
Yes.
So I just said mummies, and Matt said, that's it. I was like, that was off the top of my head. I was joking. But why not talk about mummies?
Why not, because Greg?
I do have a take on mummies that when I was a kid, they were always the least scariest monster. I was like, they're just slowly walking around. Every now and then they choke someone to death, but they're slow enough to be caught by the mummy. And I was like, that's not that scary.
Mm-hmm. You're basically being attacked by living gauze.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Dusty gauze at that, as a matter of fact. And why is it the mummies are always like from Egypt?
No, in Mexico.
Because that's where mummies come from.
Don't you know about the Aztec mummies in Mexico?
No,
Mexican
tell us
films.
About the Aztec mummies, Greg.
In Mexican films like Santo, those restaurants.
They're on parade, so we need a whole list of mummies.
Yeah, there's many. It's a tradition in Mexico, the Aztec mummies, and they fight Santo, the wrestler. It's a common monster in Mexico.
Santo? Who is Santo?
You don't know about Santo? He's like the superhero wrestler combo.
No. Hybrid. Why would I know this, Greg? Why?
I don't know.
You act so surprised that I wouldn't know Santo.
Oh, my God.
Do you know Santo, Michael?
I don't know Santo, but I do know the Peat Man, which I think was considered a mummy as well. There are peat bogs in Scotland and England. And they actually were, I don't know how they found them, but they found bodies at the bottom of these peat bogs, you know, where they get peat moss for fertilizer or whatever it is. They bring these bodies up and they were perfectly preserved and they were well over 1,000 years old. So I guess that's considered mummification.
Scottish mummies.
Yes.
They're not all Egyptian.
But weren't those mummies really accidental mummies? They weren't on purpose mummies.
Yeah. Well, I think that was
the sequel to The Accidental Tourist was The Accidental Mummy.
Yeah, The Accidental Mummy. Starring Mike Myers as the Scottish Accidental Mummy.
Yes.
I am not getting stuck in a bog.
Get my belly.
Here's the thing on this client, Greg, since you brought this. I really feel that the whole mummy genre is really just a racist trope that we need to be done with in society.
What race is being abused in this trope?
Middle Easterners primarily.
Middle Easterners,
Egyptians.
That's not really Middle East. That's Africa.
But it kind of is, though.
Okay. They speak. You know,
Arabic.
Arabic, you know, they speak Middle Eastern. Matt, don't play your games with me. You know what I'm talking about.
Hey, my geography games.
Yes. Okay. So it really wouldn't make any sense to say there was North African racist.
Well, but it would actually.
No, because you don't get it, obviously.
Matt is the quibble in Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker.
I see.
If you didn't get that already.
So
I just like things to be slightly accurate.
I'm looking for some feedback from our co-counsel, guest counsel, you know.
Well, in 1899.
That doesn't mean you, Matt. I'm looking for Michael's feedback on my statement.
About Middle Eastern Africans?
That mummies is just racist.
In which way? Explain, please.
Against North Africans.
And what way do you mean, Greg?
But they're covered in.
Well, why are they racist? Why is the mummy myth a racist thing? I don't get it.
Because it's a stereotype. Do we have white mummies?
They're all white, aren't they?
No, they're not.
The gauze. Not underneath the gauze.
Underneath the gauze, they're all brown. They're just brown people.
Okay.
What about the Scottish mummies?
Those are accidental. We've already covered that.
Yes.
Not in the movies.
But they're white.
Accidental.
Oh, so deliberate mummies are
they weren't disemboweled deliberately, the Scottish
Again,
mummies.
I'm looking for some feedback from our guest counsel. Thank you both for quibbling.
Well, I think we're trying to figure out why you think that's racist so that would give him more to talk about how
I think we should
think
we
they're
should,
racist.
I mm-hmm. think we should hear from our guest counsel as to why he thinks that I'm stupid.
Yes, Michael, why do you think Brendan is stupid?
Oh boy, I got nothing when it comes to I don't know. The funny part about this, Matt, is when the camera goes to you.
Yes.
You've got your ring light in the background and it makes it look like you have eyes.
Googly.
The googly eyes.
Googly
like,
eyes.
You're like
hello. Like,
he's Barney Google with the googly eyes.
I think
it reminds me of that Frank Zappa album cover. Yeah,
the ring light was a good idea at the time that I bought it, and I've learned for these purposes, it just makes me look like I'm insane.
I'm going to be back with this look for the rest of the
That's a better look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into the darkness that is Brendan's soul.
Since we're talking about mummies, that's apropos.
So what other kind? So I was gonna say, in 1899 was the first mummy movie, in 1899, called "Robbing Cleopatra's Tomb." It's a lost film; they can't find it anymore. But it was like the first one dealing with the mummy as a character, and then the next one didn't come out for another 12 years, which was called "The Mummy," and I think that's what it became, started the genre, you know. And just like five more until then The Mummy came out again in 1932. And the funny thing is the next one after that is called Mummy's Boys and We Want Our Mummy, which was a Three Stooges short film.
Yeah.
Oh!
In 1939. So already the mummy jokes were like flying back in the day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In 1930, they released the KKK Lynch Mummy. Remember that one?
Was that Birth of a Nation?
Yeah, it was right after that. The same director.
Right. Cecil B. DeMille?
Yeah.
No, D.W. Griffith. That's who it was. D.W. Griffith. Sorry, I got it confused. So D.W. Griffith did the first KKK/mummy crossover?
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to approach the bench and say, these two guys were saying I was a weirdo.
I never called you a weirdo.
I never did.
Yes. No,
Greg, you're the same one.
Greg has the utmost respect for you.
Brendan is the sober voice of reason on our podcast.
I'm not the sober
voice. Well, hold on a second, Greg. He's just talking about mummies being racist.
Right. Well, there could be a theory. I get it.
Trying to figure out how they're racist.
Other than the Scottish mummies, they're all like brown people or, you know, not white. So maybe there's something there.
Well, it's because they're all like disintegrating.
No, but they were brown before, you know.
They were brown really when they were alive.
You know, they were talking about mummifying Vladimir Lenin.
Michael is trying to figure out what the hell he got himself into right now.
Yeah.
Well, in New Zealand, there are Maori tribes that would keep mummified heads as trophies.
That's not the same thing.
Mummified heads?
You're out of order.
This whole court's out of order.
Aborigines also found in Australia thought they were related to
All right. In order to prevent Matt from further
techniques.
From further Googling the show, what is everybody's favorite Mummy movie?
I can't think of any. I don't like mummies. They're not scary.
I did like,
it'd be like anything with Boris Karloff, right?
Yeah, there is Boris Karloff did a couple of them, and then Hammer Studios in Britain did a few in the later on. I want to say maybe the 60s or something like that.
50s, 60s.
Any Abbott and Costello mummy movie would be mine, probably.
Right.
There was one.
What about Brendan Fraser's?
Brendan, with The Rock, wasn't The Rock?
He was the Scorpion King.
Okay. But prior to the Scorpion King one, there was the original Mummy movie with Brendan Fraser. Is that right?
Yeah.
That I thought was pretty damn good. It was a
good action adventure, and the sequel wasn't bad either. It was the third one was when Rock came into the picture, and he was this weirdly CGI'd thing that was half man, half scorpion. And
the first two had the element of like scary horror, but not like unfamily friendly horror. There was a little bit of comedy to it. I thought they were good movies. That would be my favorite. The first Mummy. The first Mummy with not that I have any sort of, because his name is Brendan, although that's an added benefit,
right? Because there's not a lot of Brendans in cinema.
Mummy Dearest, yes,
Joan Crawford Mummy was a Dearest. Mummy.
Yeah, I was bringing back the mummy jokes from the 30s.
Yes, thanks. Did any of you guys see the Tom Cruise version, like this most recent Mummy one? I did not.
I did not either, so I cannot speak on that one. Although, look, the trailers looked like they could have been entertaining. Mm-hmm. But I figured it'd probably be like Mummy Impossible is what I thought was going to come out.
Mummy Impossible. Yes. That would be cool. Well, judging by the fact that no one saw it, I think that says something about it.
Well, it just says that none of us watched it.
I think Mummy Impossible is what they would call a movie about me as a mummy, because being the big boy that I am, I think they'd run out of gauze or whatever that sheet was they would use to mummify people. So
just use like Kleenex on you. Well, you're a tall fella. You're like 6'6", man. You're like a monster. You'd be like better as Frankenstein than as a mummy.
Yes. Absolutely.
Don't insult our guest, Matt.
What? I'm just saying height-wise. I'm not insulting him. I'm not comparing his appearance to Frankenstein's monster.
Well, you are onto something there, because I have done some horror acting. I've worked at some haunts. But before that, I actually did a I'll tell you a story about this if I can slide it in here. I had a live-action event. There was. Have you ever heard of a game called Hunt a Killer?
Yes,
I think that's what I do with the sugar ants that go across my desk.
You order it online. They send you a box.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about, Michael?
Yeah, played the killer. I played the killer in the very first commercial for those online.
He was in the box.
And before they made it an internet game, the very first event for it where they launched the internet game was actually a live event, which was a scavenger hunt. I played the killer in that first commercial, which I think you could probably still find on YouTube. But at the event, it was a scavenger hunt where the story was a girl was kidnapped, and we did it at this camp. It looked like a camp right out of like Friday the 13th or something up here in Maryland. And people had to go around and look for clues. Okay. And I had to play like this hillbillyish guy, and I was walking around, I kind of had my hair down on my face. I was wearing a black t-shirt, jeans. I just kind of looked like one of them hillbilly guys from back in the woods that you don't want to run into when your car breaks down, So I was one of those guys. Right. And, there was a part towards the end of the scavenger hunt where people had to come into a cabin They had to figure out a combination, unlock a door, and come into the cabin, and I was in there, and people would look through these screens because it was getting kind of dark, and they would say, "Oh, that guy Eddie's in there. God, I hate that guy. That guy's so creepy." And I'm like, "Well, wait a minute. I'm not wearing makeup. I'm not wearing a mask. There's no prosthetics on me. I'm just walking around as me, kind of talking a little bit different. I'm like, is that what people think? I had a real complex after that. I'm like, what do people at work think? Or when I go to an appointment or something and I'm coming up, I'm like, oh God, look who it's coming. Oh geez.
Oh, it's the creepy insurance guy. Ah! Yeah,
I'm like, he wants to insure my breasts.
Maybe it was just good acting. Like you played a creepy guy so well that they were creeped out.
You transformed yourself. Yeah. Yeah. And I've had, you know, I've had success playing either, you know, the good guy, because I've played, you know, like in theater, I've played like, you know, some real good guys, but I've also played like, you know, the creep, the bad guy, the villain as well. And
but which do you prefer as an actor? Do you prefer playing the creepy guy or the hero?
Probably the creepy guy, because I like to use my imagination and turn on the creep, as you can say. You know, the
turn on the creep.
Yeah, the character. Yeah, somebody used that term on a movie I made a number of years back. It was a smaller production. It wasn't played in theaters or anything. It went straight to video. And it wasn't like well-known coast to coast. It was like a local low budget movie. And they were telling me to turn on the creep for this scene. And then when I did Gotham, the character that I played in Gotham was kind of, you know, quiet and creepy. You know, that scene was a little bit silly, so I didn't really get a chance to get real deep with it or anything. But
what episode of Gotham were you in?
Season 5, episode 8. It was maybe the third from the last episode.
So like the final season or?
Yeah, the final season.
Oh, I might not have seen it. I've seen most of the shows except the final season.
I've seen them all. I love Gotham. You were in Gotham?
I played a character named Dale, and I was killed by the ventriloquist, Mr. Penn. You could tell it was getting to be the end of the show. Because I only died once. I wasn't one of those people that died like 5 times.
Oh my God. That show, everyone came back.
Yeah. I died once and that was it for me. And I was killed in the episode where they were building the submarine and trying to get out of Gotham. It was the Penguin and the Riddler. It was Ed Nygma and Oswald Cobblepot. I played one of Oswald's henchmen, one of his muscle, named Dale, and I was this big goofy guy. They gave me ill-fitting clothing, like I was wearing like sleeves that were too short and high waters, and I just had this like duh look on my face. And I got shot by Mr. Penn came in with the ventriloquist with Mr. Scarface. Mm-hmm. I was the guy they shot. So I was in one episode. And that was a great experience right there. I really felt like I was working with a family. People, even though I was only in one episode. A very dysfunctional family shooting.
Riddler and Penguin. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Quite dysfunctional. But behind the scenes, I would have to say very friendly and very warm and very cordial. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm curious. So that was, you were in one episode. Yep. I never saw Gotham. Sorry. Those were probably what, 40 minute episodes?
Yeah, I guess. Well, yeah, they're, I think
an hour without commercials.
If you have the commercials in it, it's an hour.
Right. I think so. My question is how long were you filming? Like, what was the length of time you were on set and did that?
Days.
Like two days. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
And you were on 2 days for like 1 minute?
No, I was in two or three scenes. I was in two scenes alive and one scene dead. I was laying on the floor dead.
So what are the lines like when you're dead?
Just as many lines as I had when I was alive, because they said I was they said I was big, I was mute and dumb as a post, is how because they were asking, when they brought me into this secret lair, they were asking if they could trust me. They said, don't worry about Dale. He's mute and dumb as a post. And then they come to me and I'm looking like, you know, the funny part about that was I auditioned for 2 parts for that episode. I went up to New York, and the one part that I auditioned for, I just had to react to the monologue or to the dialogue and make dumb faces. Okay. And then the other part that I tried out for, if you've seen that episode, there was a scene where young Bruce Wayne and Alfred go through a tunnel, and there was like a humanoid down there that was mauling and mutilating and killing people. I also auditioned for that part, and that audition involved basically making snarling and growling noises like the Tasmanian devil. And I was kind of glad that I got the part that I got, because they only showed that character in a fight, and they only like showed like a brief glimpse of the person's face.
Right.
And then,
so what, I'm sorry, but I have to ask. Uh-huh. So some of the noises, please.
That's you got good. The part. You got the part.
Well, you can see why it was a little bit better, you know, after that hearing that spectacle.
I feel like I make those noises when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah, so, that's why my wife made me get a CPAP.
Right.
That explains it for me, too.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But that was a great experience. And, you know, I have to say I was treated very, very well. You know, the people, you know, my scene partners and everything were just, you know, very kind, very friendly. They all came over personally and welcomed me, you know, welcome to the Gotham family is what they said.
Was this nice. A Baltimore production? Did they film in Baltimore?
No, it was filmed in Brooklyn, New York at Steiner Studios. It's Steiner's right near the, it's not far from the Brooklyn Bridge. It was at an old Navy yard that was up in Brooklyn, New York. I think
Williamsburg,
Washington Street, maybe. Maybe it was Williamsburg. I'm not sure.
That's right New across York. The bridge.
Yeah, it is. It was right across the bridge, and it looked like it was kind of on the border of a Hasidic neighborhood, maybe.
Well, you can tell it's Williamsburg if they have like three corner hats and people are dressed in period costumes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they were walking down the street playing the flute and the drums and
the lute, the fife.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what people were doing there.
The whole cast of Gotham. That's how they dress.
Yeah, exactly. War.
It was a Renaissance fair.
And the guy playing the fife had a bandage around his head, and he was limping. You know,
he was the original mummy, actually.
Yeah, right. Hey, there you go.
Speaking of mummies, so mummies on parade. Are we guilty? Are we not guilty?
Apparently, he just said that it was a mummy on parade. It was a mummy.
It was.
Yes.
Blowing a fife, and whether guilty or not, apparently we're not on trial. We're just discussing the client of Mummies on Parade.
We're guilty.
So mummies have a right to parade.
I think I would say, yeah. You know, as well as storm the Capitol building. I think it's a combination.
Those were mummies?
I think that's a different episode, man.
I think it might be. Gone a completely different route.
But they certainly can't parade. What would a mummy parade flag look like, though? Would it be just a pyramid or gauze bandages?
It would probably be like a naked baseball. Like if you were to take the leather off of a baseball.
Yep. Or I was thinking it could just be several strips. You know, like just instead of it being like a full one-piece flag, several gauze strips, like rows of them.
Oh, like with spaces like in between, like almost streamers.
But would
people recognize them as being mummy-esque, though?
Well, you'd probably have to dirty them up a little bit from having been in a tomb.
Yeah.
It depends on how authentic you wanted to be with the mummy material. You
got to get a good curse going with that, too.
That's true, too. That's
you can't really have
too.
A mummy story without a good curse.
Well, you can't have a mummy parade. The mummy parade would get rained out if there was a true curse, too.
Greg, I'm curious. If you were a mummy, what curses would you place upon the people who found your mummified corpse?
I would say that all of their pristine mint comics would be diminished and not be mint anymore.
So this assumes that they have a comic book collection.
Well, so your mummy curse specific to comic book nerd collectors?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's all I could think of. That was off the top of my head.
That's incredibly specific.
Wow. I think that would work. I mean,
yeah, for a lot of the mummy nerds wouldn't invade mummies' tombs.
For the mummy to be so present that he would understand that somehow 4,000 years in the future, people would collect little papyrus-like books, pamphlets of gods and goddesses. Oh, no, that's... I think there's a short film in that, Greg.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so that's one curse, Greg. So...
Okay, Matt, what would your curse be, Matt?
Yeah. I think Greg outdid himself on that
my,
one.
My curse would be to have long, extended conversations with you.
You'd have to sit in my house for weeks and talk to me.
Exactly. Your mummified body also, so they would have to have these conversations with you. They would just
Michael,
be talking
what would your
going,
curse be, Michael?
Yes?
What would your curse be?
My curse. What would my curse be?
Yes.
I would say that. Well, let me see. A good curse.
Oh, just right off the top of your head. Don't even think too hard about it.
Okay. Don't think too hard about it. Yeah.
No.
That you get an ice cream headache even from eating hot foods.
That would suck.
Damn, dude, that's horrible.
No matter what you eat, you get an ice cream headache.
Oh,
how long does it last for? Like,
until,
for the length of time that you're eating?
Well, you can only get a prescription. You have to get a prescription to fix it.
Oh my God, that's dark, dude.
I would not violate that mummy's tomb if that was
no.
I'd be like,
no.
That.
I don't even like
pizza.
Yeah, I don't even like when it's just a little bit for like a minute or two. I can't imagine everything I eat. No, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
I'd be anorexic if that was the case. I'd lose 200 pounds.
Well, he said you'd get a prescription to make it go. A prescription to what? Like cocaine? What are you talking about? What would?
Well, whatever the cure is. It won't go away on its own. You have to get a prescription or you have to get a I guess they have curses and they have blessings. You would have to speak to a magic person, some sort of
like a sleight of hand artist,
yes, like a Wicca, yes. Priestess,
a witch, or a
he said a magic person.
In Florida, they would in
to be like Stevie Nicks.
Yes.
Stevie Nicks would prescribe you OxyContin, and that would be the end of it.
Yes, or possibly too. I was thinking a part B of this could be if you eat hot food, you get the ice cream headache. If you eat cold food, you burn the roof of your mouth.
Like, oh, that would suck too.
You know when you eat pizza and it's not cool yet, and you take a bite and it just sticks right to the roof of your mouth, and when you finally move it, like all the skin comes off the roof of your mouth. And you swallow that with the bite of pizza.
That's almost as bad as my curse, which is having to talk to Greg. So.
You know, Matt, Greg, I really think we should have let Michael think about this more because what he came off with the top of his head was the darkest shit I think I've heard. So
we haven't got a curse from you yet, Brendan.
Oh, my curse. My curse would be...
that you end up like me?
No.
That your life is as bad as
it's
mine?
It's not all about you, Greg. My curse would be anytime Nookie was close, you'd fall asleep. No Nookie ever. You just pass out.
Isn't Nookie like that girl from Jersey Shore?
Yeah.
No, that's somebody else.
So it's like if she walks by, you fall asleep.
Yes.
That would be okay. That's not a bad
thing. No, it's the song from Limp Bizkit. It's like anytime that song is on the air.
Yes.
That's a cookie. That's a cookie.
You did it all for the cookie.
I did it all for the sex. I just don't know how many Girl Scouts are still downstairs. That's why I said Nookie.
Yeah. That's why I said Nookie, because they might hear you.
Oh, I forgot the Girl Scouts were in the house.
Yes.
Don't ask, Michael.
Don't tell. Don't ask, don't tell.
Why he has Girl Scouts in his house.
Okay.
I don't have them. The police are on the way. I don't have them trapped like Matt does. They are all willing participants.
Okay. They're there for a den meeting or something or whatever it is.
They're conspiring to sell cookies like drugs throughout my community.
Okay, I see.
I'm kind of like the Breaking Bad of Girl Scout cookies in my town.
Okay.
You sell the blue cookies?
Well, they say all the strange things happen in Florida nowadays, so maybe we're witnessing another one.
Yeah.
They say, I live here. It happens every damn day. I have a whole lot of friends who, you know, I grew up with in the Northwest. I can't stand every time something weird happens in the news, I get hit up on Twitter like, is this a Florida guy again, Brendan? Florida. It's kind of an old joke at this point.
Florida man. You know, there's a whole Florida man page on Facebook.
Yeah, there is. Yes. There is. You know,
I'm more of a superhero though. Florida man.
Right. Well, the thing is, too, Florida's huge. You know, I mean, what are the chances you're going to be right next to somebody doing that? You know, I mean, it's not like we're talking Rhode Island or Delaware or something. You know.
No. But the real truth of it is, so you guys all know, being from out of state. Florida's laws relative to if you get arrested for something, Florida's laws are completely transparent. So the news media can go and get arrest reports daily of all kinds of nutty shit that Florida people do. That's not to say that we do it more, although we probably do, but it's more available to the press to report on than, say, Maryland or, I don't know, Oregon has got its own crazy. That's a whole separate subject. Yes.
Yeah, we have a guy who rides a unicycle with a bagpipe that has flames shooting out of it and is a Darth Vader mask while he does it. That's what we have here.
Yeah, but he's running yesterday. But he's running for mayor, though, isn't he?
And he won, actually.
And he won. He's probably going to win.
Was he the one who sprayed mace on somebody who came up to him recently?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
He won. Right? He still won.
There was a guy in Baltimore, he used to ride the buses all the time, and he would dress like the Michael Myers version of the Cat in the Hat, and he would really creep people out.
That would creep me out.
Yeah, I'd rather see a guy on a unicycle with a Darth Vader hat than Michael. Yeah. Michael Myers' Cat in the Hat movie is creepy enough that it exists, let alone that someone's walking around in real life.
So would it be better to have that or the Michael Myers mask from Halloween?
Oh, I should have said Mike Myers. yeah, really. I know.
I'm still with Cat in the Hat, Mike. Yeah, no.
So what if Michael Myers would actually wore the mask for Mike Myers or vice versa?
What if Mike Myers came on the subway and was like, hey, I've had a hard time. Could you give me some money? Any money you can give me? That would be great. I want to.
What if there is a hat and a cat?
Oh, I was talking about Mike Myers or Michael Myers from Halloween.
Yes, it's getting very confusing.
Yeah, I was going to say we should probably.
Well, you know, that ties into mummies because the
mummies
often get cats buried with them.
Yes, yeah, it does. They did.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Mummy I saw cat. That on Netflix. Did you see that special on Netflix where they were like pulling the mummified cats out of the tomb?
No, I just was making that up, actually.
Oh, no. My God, dude.
That was a thing.
Well, cats now, were considered gods.
Yeah, on Netflix, there's a documentary. I watched it with my daughter. We were doing ancient Egypt. So that's what we watched. It was movie day. Do you remember that? So Dad had a hangover, and so we watched that movie. But
good,
it was fantastic because they go down into this thing. If you haven't watched the documentary, it's well worth it. They go down into this thing, and they're pulling these mummified cats, and then they get this big giant thing, and they're like, this can't be a cat. What the hell is this? Anyway, it's a great show.
What was it?
A mummified lion.
Oh, wow.
A mummified lion cub. So it wasn't like a full-on lion, but it was a lion cub. But they're pulling these things out, you know, and the cats are cats. And then they get this thing, and it's like twice the size. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And then they reveal later on. Anyway, it's a good show. You should watch it.
I think you should incorporate that into your next murder mystery, Michael.
Mummified cats, yes.
Cats and lions. Like, what? Mm-hmm. How would that show its way throughout the train? Anyway, why don't you go ahead and do a final plug for yourself, Michael, and your program. And
okay.
And we will wrap up, the mummy episode.
Absolutely, absolutely. Clever. Well, thank you for having me, fellas. I really enjoyed my time on your show today. You can find my podcast, Foul Players Radio, www.foulplayersradio.com. That's F-O-W-L. You can find out about my murder mystery troupe, the Foul Players of Perryville, at foulplayersofperryville.com. I can also be found on Facebook, Michael Spedden. I also have a Facebook presence for a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram presence for Foul Players Radio and the Foul Players of Perryville too. You can see me pretty much every day on every daytime show that involves a judge in the J.G. Wentworth commercial. I play the Viking that comes out of the back of the bus in that commercial. And I am in the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt movie, Kimmy versus the Reverend, now on Netflix. I play the bartender, and you can find me on Gotham season 5, episode 8 of Gotham on Netflix too. And
Dale the Mute.
Yes.
Dale the Mute. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. My wife loved that show. Was that season 1, season 2?
It was the movie.
It was Kimmy versus the Reverend movie.
Oh.
That came out last summer. If you go through Netflix, it's separate from the Kimmy Schmidt series.
The show?
Yeah, oh, okay. If you looked up Kimmy versus the Reverend, you'll see it. And I'm in there. I play a bartender, and you'll know it's me.
Because you're behind the bar.
Yes.
Because he's almost 7 feet tall. I mean,
right.
You know, come on.
He's a giant of a man.
Are you a mummy bartender?
And also, no. Yeah, well, you know, I wasn't. I got nothing for that, so I'm just going to stop it right there. And I was going to thank you, Michael.
Yeah, I'm definitely watching that movie this weekend. It's on Netflix. I'm going to watch it.
Well, wonderful. Well, I hope you enjoy it. And thanks, guys.
We're glad you came on guest counsel to discuss our client Mummies on Parade. And don't forget, everybody, to check out Michael Spedden at Foul Players I'll say that in English. Radio. And thanks, Maria.
Thanks, Maria.
Thank you, Maria.
This has been the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker computer telecast, where any advice has been designed purely for amusement and deep-sea diving. Please take a candy on your way out, pet the lion tamer, and subscribe to this computer telecast if you know it's good for you. The Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker deny all culpability in today's events and are not to be confused with real law offices that have a secretary and books and stuff. Thank you all. Have a good day.